What is up, party people? Welcome to the pilot episode of the Believe in Mavs podcast. I'm your host, Ronz Rajan. And first, let me start out by thanking you for sharing this first episode with me. I know there's tons of things you can be doing right now, so the fact that you're giving me your precious time means the world to me, and I hope I don't let you down with this first episode. Now, fair warning to my fellow Mavs fans out there. This isn't going to be the most glowing of reviews for the Mavs, but I am a generally optimistic person, and I want to start off with the positives before we start getting into the nitty-gritty. So the positives are things could be a lot worse. In fact, a few months back, they were. To start off this season, everything that could go wrong for this Mavs team did go wrong. And that manifested in a 8-13 start. As a result of COVID protocols, injuries, players working themselves back into shape, it was a train wreck. But since that February 1st loss to the Phoenix Suns, this team has gone on a 15-8 run. They're now above 500 in the playoff picture. And in every facet of the game, they've seemed to improve, whether it's shooting, defense, overall chemistry, starting to look like a basketball team. Which brings us to today, just a few days removed from the NBA trade deadline, and it was a busy one to say the least. We saw players like Evan Fournier going to the Celtics, Nikola Vucevic to the Bulls, Aaron Gordon to the Nuggets, Victor Oladipo to the Heat. And Mavs fans were watching the trade deadline wondering when that big move was going to happen. You know, we had our eyes on players like Andre Drummond, of course. And for good reason. This is a team that is badly in need of rebounding, of physicality, of length. They are definitely lacking in the post. That's what made it a little more puzzling when the Mavs' big trade deadline acquisition was 36-year-old J.J. Redick. Now, don't get me wrong. I love J.J. Redick, and the logic behind getting him is sound. This past offseason, the Mavs made moves. One of them was for Josh Richardson from the 76ers. Now, in return for him, while there are other details, the deal really revolved around us getting Josh Richardson and the 76ers getting our best pure shooter, Seth Curry, and arguably the best shooter in the NBA. Now, the thinking behind the deal is pretty self-explanatory. The 76ers are one of the longest, defensive-minded, aggressive physical teams in the NBA who just needed some spacing and shooting. Meanwhile, the Mavs are coming off a record-breaking year where they were the most efficient offense in league history. Defense is where they're lacking, though, because this team pretty much reflects its face in Luka Doncic. They're so exciting on offense, but they leave a lot to be desired on defense. That's where Josh Richardson comes into the picture, as he fits the mold of the archetype 3-and-D player for the NBA. The guy who's able to give you hustle and effort and strong on-ball defense on the defensive end of the floor, and yet he's able to knock down a spot-up open three. It's essentially exactly how you want to build around a player like Luka Doncic. Unfortunately, Josh Richardson was not the Josh Richardson of old when he first got here to Dallas. There's an expected drop-off in shooting when you go from a player like Seth Curry to a Josh Richardson, but you kind of take that in stride because you assume there's going to be a bump upwards in defense. Unfortunately, both of these things were not exactly the bill of goods that they were sold to Dallas when he first got here. You see, Josh Richardson at one point was shooting a career low 29% from three, and he was not exactly the defender that we were expecting him when we got him. But to Josh Richardson's credit, he's turned it around. I'll give him that. Since the All-Star break, he's been shooting lights out 39.5% from three. He is living up to his reputation as an on-ball stopper, and he's essentially the de facto number three on this team. Some nights, he's even the second best player on this Mavs squad. So that deal is starting to look like a win-win for both teams. That being said, they are still missing Seth Curry's shooting. There's no way around it. So that's where that J.J. Redick deal comes into place. Now, J.J. Redick, for his career, is 41% from three. And even at his age 36 season, he's still shooting 36% from three. So I'm not mad at the deal whatsoever. There is sound logic behind it. My issue is that that's all they did this trade deadline. And this deal for Redick proves one thing, and that's the Mavs know what their identity is. They know where their bread is buttered, and they want to build on a strength, which is outside shooting. They were historically great last season, and they want to get back to that point. JJ Redick fills that need that was left by Seth Curry, and so it makes sense why they would go down that route. So you upgrade your defense with a Josh Richardson. You get back to the shooting that you had with JJ Redick. This team is essentially markedly better than they were last year in theory. But there's one lingering issue from last year that is blatantly obvious when you watch this Mavs team. And it's that they are missing defensive presence down low, toughness, physicality, and the ability to rebound, especially late in games. That's why Mavs fans look at an Andre Drummond and they see something that they don't have. They see that he fills a hole. And it would seem like it's common sense then that the Mavs would have interest. And by all reports, they did talk about it, but they said we'd rather wait out for him to be bought out before we try to pursue him. To which I say, you have to be pretty delusional if you don't see the history of the Mavs and realize players are not going to be choosing to come to Dallas when they have other options on the table. You got Luka Doncic through the draft. You got Kristaps Porzingis through trade. DeAndre Jordan, Dwight Howard, Deron Williams at one point, all the major free agents that you sought out to get, they all spurned you. So at some point, you have to know that people aren't going to go out of their way to choose Dallas when bigger market teams like Los Angeles and Brooklyn are out there. And here's the thing. I think Mark Cuban and Donnie Nelson are fully aware that Andre Drummond was going to sign with another team if they didn't trade for him. I just come to the conclusion now that they were fully okay with him going to a different team, which is even more frustrating because that means they look at the team as currently constructed and they think that's good enough. And here's the thing, when you look at this roster, I don't know how you can say that. I get the case against Andre Drummond and him coming to Dallas, mainly because he and Kristaps Porzingis are both natural centers and neither of them can guard on the perimeter. Spacing might be an issue. I get it all. But the thing is, this team is still not great at rebounding. And there's also this case that's been made when they look at studies and they say that players who are prolific rebounders, typically their teams aren't great at rebounding because they're just getting the rebounds that are already there. But here's the thing. The Mavs aren't even getting the rebounds that are there for them to grab. Tell me if you heard this scenario before. The Mavs need to get a late game stop, and they manage to make the opposing team miss, only for them to grab a rebound, and the Mavs essentially watch them as they run out the clock. So if you see that and you think the Mavs would be just as fine rebounding as they would with Andre Drummond than they would without, you're lying to yourself at the end of the day. The Mavericks are as weak of a rebounding team as possible. And that's so frustrating to see because offensively, they are so potent. But defensively, they're all liabilities at the end of the game. And when they actually get the stop that they need to, they just give the other team life by letting them grab an offensive rebound. Now, as I said before, the acquisition of JJ Redick speaks to the fact the Mavs are all in on their identity as a fully offensively driven team who's essentially saying defense be damned. They're going to just try to come out and outscore you every single night and just hope that's a good enough strategy. And when their shots are falling, it is a good strategy. When on nights where they shoot 32% or above from three, they're 21-10. When they shoot 31% or below from three, they're 2-9. They're essentially saying we're going to live and die by the three. And that's the strategy that everyone kind of attributed to the Golden State Warriors of the mid-2010s. But here's the thing. That team was still great on the defensive end. They don't get enough credit for that. This Mavs team, 21-10 is still great. Let's be clear. It's still above 66%. That would essentially put them in the top three for the Western Conference. That's not bad. But when you look at their losses and you see the teams they lose to, it's always exposing a certain weakness that the Mavs have. As I said before, they're 21-10 when they shoot 32% or above from three. That's 10 losses. And still, 66% winning percentage is still impressive. That still puts you in the top half of the Western Conference. but you're not unbeatable. All it says is that the Mavs can only beat you one way. Because when they don't shoot well, they're 2-9. There's no other facets to the game that they can beat teams with. And there's no way you can look at a team and say that they're going to have a serious title run when they only have a one-dimensional kind of game. Look at the teams they lost to when they still shot 32%. Lakers, Bucks, Nuggets, Jazz, Blazers, 76ers, Clippers. And then they did lose one game to the Thunder, but that's also because Luka and Porzingis were out. So I'll give that a mulligan. Still though, those other teams, they all have something in common, right? Look at the Lakers roster. Yes, LeBron and AD are monsters, arguably the best duo in the league, but that's still a team that has Marc Gasol, Montrezl Harrell, Markieff Morris. Oh, and just so you know, they also added Andre Drummond, the guy that you didn't think was good enough for you, but the reigning defending champions thought it was good enough for them. Then you look at the Bucks, and the Bucks management could have looked at Giannis and say, he's strong enough to dominate down low, we can leave things as is. But no, they still went out of their way to surround him with Brook Lopez, Bobby Porter, and just recently added PJ Tucker. Then you look at the Nuggets. Having Jokic in the low post is strong enough, but they still have Millsap, Jamichael Green, and added Aaron Gordon. You look at the Utah Jazz, they have the best record in the NBA, so they must be doing something right. And they also beat the Mavs twice. And even though they have a defensive player of the year caliber year in and year out in Rudy Gobert, they still get physical stalwarts like Royce O'Neal, Juwan Morgan, Bogdanovich, Jordis Niang. When people look at Portland, they see Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum and just credit everything to that backcourt. And rightfully so, they deserve a lot of credit, but that team is not as effective without the contributions of guys doing the dirty work like Enes Kanter, Harry Giles, and Robert Covington. Then the 76ers, second best record in the NBA, best in the East, the team that you traded with. Yes, they already have Embiid and Simmons, who are strong enough as is, but they said, that's not enough for us. So they went and got Dwight in the offseason. They have guys like Tobias Harris and Mike Scott. Against the Clippers, Kawhi and Paul George are a strong enough duo as is, but they're made to look even better when they have a nitty-gritty cast like Marcus Morris, Zubac, who ate your lunch in the post the last time you played him, Nicholas Batum, Ibaka, Patrick Beverley, Patrick Patterson. See, what all these teams have in common is they're never just content. They're constantly acquiring players. Player acquisition is a 365-day-a-year job. Why do you see a team like the Nets, who have Kyrie, KD, and James Harden, still go out of their way to get a LaMarcus Aldridge and Blake Griffin? Because they're gearing up for a long playoff run. And I get you want to mirror and mimic the 2010s Golden State Warrior Championship squads who just shot teams out of the buildings. But like I said, they were still a great defensive team, and they had an X factor like Draymond Green. You need that enforcer. You need that Dennis Rodman. You need that Charles Oakley. You need that Draymond Green. And right now, the Mavs don't have it. That's where Andre Drummond comes in. I get he may not be an analytic darling. I get teams who see these guys think he's going to kill our spacing. But at the end of the day, who is that guy who will do the things that are not seen in the box score, but will get into a fight with another team? Who is that guy who's going to bring that sense of toughness to this team? Because right now, I'm telling you, this is viewed as one of the softest teams in the league, and teams know it. You can try to outscore them, but once you get into the playoffs and the game gets slower and the game gets more physical, it's hard to see this Mavs style of play lasting longer than a round. Now, I hate to be doom and gloom, and this is probably the longest span of my life that I've been this negative. So I'll put a positive spin on this. In lieu of all of this, the Mavs are still contending for a playoff spot. They are still one of the most efficient and exciting offenses in the league. So with that in mind, imagine how much more potent this team would be if they did have that physical presence in the middle. When you watch the Mavs' last game against the Warriors, you look at Kristaps Porzingis, who is so unique. Guys who are 7'3 are not, or at least should not be able to do the things that he does. Yet you see him against Golden State, and there was a point where he had Stephen Curry guarding him on the elbow, and he refused to back him down. Is that by design? Is Carlisle telling him not to post up a 6'3 guard? Or is that his mindset? Because here's the thing, if it is KP's mindset, that's totally fine. Not everybody has to be the type to throw around elbows and get physical in the post, but at least bring in someone else who can. Because otherwise, once this game starts to slow down and the nitty-gritty type of play in the playoffs comes around, this team is going to get smothered and demolished. I hope I'm wrong, though. I hope they can shoot every team out of the gym from now until the end of the finals. I'm just saying there is no historical precedent. And even the teams that are amazing at shooting still have role players who are able to get under team skin, are able to get physical in the post, are able to play tough defense and grab rebounds. And if the Mavs want to take that next step from an exciting offensive team that's usually an early round fodder to being a legitimate contender that teams are afraid of in the playoffs, they need to do a better job of acquiring players who will do that, exactly that sort of thing. But on that note, that's all my time for today, guys. Once again, I want to take this moment to genuinely thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to this first episode of the Believe in Mavs podcast. I'm really hoping it's not the last one, but either way, it was a fun experience. Take care, God bless, and catch you next time on the Believe Podcast Network.